roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Thursday. That's right. Started off the new year pretty good, and now we're cruising along. Look, the UFC Fight Island shows are coming up. So right now it's more about the news. It's more about the interviews and things like that. But man, am I excited over some of the big fights that have been signed in the last few weeks. And we'll continue talking about those. But as an MMA fan, hopefully you guys start prepping yourselves. And hopefully you guys have downloaded the free MMA Junkie app. Free on all tablets and smartphones, and hopefully you're a frequent visitor of MMA Junkie, because we got a lot of news that breaks all the time. Good stuff in there, and we cover the sport, not just the UFC, but all the other organizations. So I wanted to give a quick plug for that for any of the new viewers or any of the casual viewers that are strolling through Sportscaster on Mondays and Thursdays, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Also, don't forget, on January 23rd, it's UFC 257, and Goz and I will be hosting a watch-along for UFC 257. Just like in the previous couple shows, we'll probably be ducking in early, so we'll probably watch a total of 7 fights with you, including the main event of Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier. Plenty of reminders throughout the month of January, but start locking it in on your calendar. Today, we're going to have Eric Nixick on the show. He is the general manager of Extreme Couture, and he's also one of the top coaches in MMA. In fact, he's the 2020 co-coach of the year, along with Tyson Chartier, for the MMA Junkie Awards that have been given out. Again, I'm sending you to MMA Junkie. You should go there anyway, but that's something that we do is we give out awards for, like, knockout of the year, coach of the year, gym of the year, things like that. So congrats to Eric Nixick. It's going to be fun talking to him in a few moments. And again, we'll cover the news, all that good stuff. So buckle up. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, January 7th.
Habla español, amigo.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
So I want to start off the show, first of all, by saying happy birthday to our cousin Charles. We call him Charlie. And yeah, it's his birthday. He's one of my favorite cousins because he's closer to me in age. So I've spent a lot of time with him, including being roommates with him for a while. So I hope he's having a great birthday. And also my comadre, Trina, I baptized her kid. The kid that I always talk about, Logan, who plays football in Southern California. He's a great quarterback at Orange Lutheran High School. That's her kid. So anyway, yeah, Goz. I was looking, man. There's really some great fights coming on. You know, 3 fights in Fight Island to get things going. I'm pumped. I'm pumped now. I'm already considering like a fight week started. I guess we could call it a fight month.
For me, that the Holloway Cater fight is just about as good as matchmaking as you could possibly make. I mean, those are just 2 dudes that are going to – they're going to bang, but I think Calvin's going to be more technical in his approach. He's really, really fun to watch. And, you know, we talk about our guest being Eric Nixick on the other side of that coach of the year, because it was a co-coach of the year. was Tyson Chartier, who is Calvin Kattar's head coach. They've done a lot of stuff, so they can solve riddles over there. And Max Holloway, I think that first fight with Volkanovski, I think a lot of that came down to coaching. If you watch the rematch, I think that's where Max Holloway maybe put a little bit more effort into that. So I really think with a smart game plan and the way Calvin Kattar fights, I think he could give Max Holloway hell. I think it's going to be – I mean, I'm so excited for that fight, just as much as I am for title fights and all that. It's a great scrap.
Yeah, me too. And Holloway, boy, I can't say enough about that guy. I thought he was going to start – I thought he had done this goes.
Plateaued.
And I thought – yeah, I thought that was it, right? And if he could get past Volkanovski, it didn't mean he couldn't continue with title defenses and beating other guys. And maybe Volkanovski was just a tough riddle for him to solve. But he really did plateau. But I thought he got better even though he lost to Alexander Volkanovski. I thought he beat Alexander Volkanovski. In fact, I thought it was one of the bigger I don't know if we can call it an upset because it had nothing to do with the odds. I was just upset after the fight. But I'm also going to stop short of calling it a robbery because I think a robbery is like an injustice. A robbery is like you hit Twitter and 10 of your favorite media members or 10 of your favorite hardcore fans. Of those 10, 9 say, you know, Holloway and one says Volkanovski. And then it continues, you know, 18 out of 20, something like that, where you got one, some nut guy, you know, that just saw it the other way or whatever. But I didn't see it like that. It was more like a 7-3, 7.5-2.5, maybe even an 8-2. So I guess it was getting there. But I just remember saying, oh, man, like, because I don't know Max that well. So it wasn't like an, oh, man, like I had anything to do with it, with him. I can't even remember who I bet. I think I bet Volkanovski, to tell you the truth. But it was like an, oh, man, this guy just lost to the champ twice. We're not going to see this fight anytime soon, you know, regardless. And this was the one you should have done a rematch. Mm-hmm. They should have done it off this type of a finish, not the first one. I thought the first one was clear, Volkanovski, you know. So Holloway has improved, and had he not made those adjustments, I probably would easily pick Calvin Kattar, but I think Holloway's, he came in a little bit more lean and strong, and I think he started to present something with the kicks again, you know what I mean? So we'll see, man, but I'm pumped up for that one on ABC, too.
I thought it was a stick-up or a pickpocket. Like you said, it wasn't the biggest robbery. It wasn't a heist or anything like that, but I thought it was pretty clear that the kid won. So, yeah, definitely that would have been one of those scenarios where I think you, if you said run it back, I think people would go again. But, hey, man, a lot of people had it going the other way. I feel like they'll fight eventually. I think it'll happen. But I'll say this. Volkanovski may have won that first fight, I think. There was more of a stamp on it than I think what Holloway did to him. But it seems like Holloway had more rooms to make adjustments. Like, I'm not really sure what Volkanovski is going to do in that third fight if they fight again. I think he's like, I would lean more towards Max now after seeing that second performance. So definitely looking forward to seeing that. But to see that, you got to see Calvin Kattar and Max Holloway. And I don't know I think that's an even tougher matchup.
Here's that card from top to bottom. We got Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar again on ABC and ESPN Plus. But yeah, the main card on ABC will start at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. So it's a noontime affair here on the Pacific time zone. But again, on ABC, the co-main event is Matt Brown versus Carlos Condit. Li Jingliang is stepping in, and he's going to be fighting Santiago Ponzinibbio. That's solid. Welterweight's there. Joaquin Buckley, he of the KO of the year guy, he's fighting Alessio De Chirico. Puna Soriano, recent guest of ours here on MMA Junkie Radio, in fact, Monday's show, he's fighting Dusko Todorovic. Quick note on that, all of our shows are archived, so as soon as you're done with this one, you could just stay on our page and go back to the previous show and watch a one-hour show on Junkie, reflecting on the weekend and us talking to Puna Soriano. Phil Haas versus Nasruddin Imavov. Jaselyn Edwards versus Wu Yanan. Omari Akhmedov versus Tom Breeze. Carlos Felipe versus Justin Taffa. I'm into that one, by the way. Mike Grundy versus Nick Lentz. Ramazan Emiyev versus David Zawada. Vanessa Mello versus Sarah Morass. And Jacob Kilburn versus Austin Lingo. Then what the UFC does is, well, Goz, did you have a reaction to that? Any of those fights, did you like them? I mean, Brown and Condit, we've been waiting for a while. It's almost like you don't want to talk about it and just enjoy it when it gets here.
Yeah, I mean, some of those are, they're decent fights, but that's a very heavy main event card. Mm-hmm. And with everything that's going on in the world, I would be nervous to put on a card like that. But if it does go off, it has kind of like that. Back in the day, the Fox cards, whenever you're on live TV is when you tend to have these fights where you know two guys are just going to scrap. And they got quite a few of those. So I think we look at ABC and we think more casual fan. Casual fan, I think, is going to dig this card.
Mm-hmm. And so the following weekend is UFC 257. But what a lot of people don't know is sandwiched in between these two fight cards we're talking about, the ABC card and the pay-per-view, where we'll be hosting the watch-along, is a UFC fight night. It's UFC Chiesa versus Magny, UFC on ESPN 20, UFC Fight Island 8, and eventually I think it's also called UFC Fight Night 250. No, what are they on? I don't know what they're on. I'll find it, though, because we actually use the Fight Night series, so I should know this. But it is a Fight Night card, and it's headlined by Michael Chiesa versus Neil Magny. I'm digging that one. I feel like Chiesa just hasn't fought much, like, in the last few years. I really enjoy watching that guy fight. I think it's because he won me over as just a straight-up fan of a guy who loves his craft and loves his sport.
Michael Chiesa is a tough cat, man. I mean, think about, I don't even know, like, if you ever run into him in person, he's so big, man. I mean, I think he could, like, talk you into thinking he's, like, a middleweight or something like that. The dude just comes to fight, and now he's one of those guys, kind of like Paul Felder, that's been able to do a little bit of the analyst work. He always gives you an honest fight. That's why I tune in for people like that. I can't miss people like that.
Yeah, and it's actually not a fight night. It's actually going to go with UFC on ESPN 20 because it's on big ESPN. So two cards for the UFC on major networks, ABC for the previous one with Holloway and Cater. And this one's on ESPN and ESPN Plus. This one's going to go live. So, again, it's going to be an early affair on a Wednesday. Same Wednesday we'll be watching Embedded and previewing, you know, the pay-per-view. So keeping an eye on their weight cuts, their press conferences, all the media that Connor and Dustin are doing. We're going to have a nice little break with this card, Chiesa versus Magny. Wednesday cards are pretty cool, I'm telling you. They break up the week really, really nice, especially as we're now winding down football season. I think basketball season, we're all slow to get into that. Hockey, I don't even know if it's started yet. Baseball, of course, is off. College football's wrapping up as well, or will be wrapping up soon. They're on their college championship game. So this one will be a nice one to break up the week here. Here's the rest of the card for that one. Douglas Silva de Andrade versus Lerone Murphy. Francisco Figueiredo versus Jerome Rivera. Roxanne Mortaferri versus Vivian Araujo. Matt Schnell versus Tyson Nam. Tyson Nam was a recent guest of ours. Carlos Condit. Wait, mentioned that earlier. Zaruk Adishev versus Sue Mudigeri. Vinicius Mojea versus Isaac Villanueva. I have to look up those and program my Portuguese or Spanish if I'm or using an H for the R. Victoria Leonardo versus Manon Fiorot. Dalcha Lungimbula versus Marcus Perez. Mason Jones versus Mike Davis. Warley Alvarez versus Muni Leze. But again, the big one that night is Chiesa versus Magny.
Like that fight. It's good. Neil Magny doesn't get the respect he deserves.
Yeah. And who's not going to root for Roxy, right? Like, she's sandwiched in that card, and she fights her ass off is what I like. She may not have like the most gracious style, I guess. You know, it's not like the world's best jab, but it's a jab. It's good. It's not the world's best power, you know, right hand or anything like that, but she can still throw and rock you. You know what I mean? And she just has this incredible pace, and she's always been overlooked. It's definitely sad that that's happened, but she has been, and she just keeps proving people wrong, man. She's somebody that said, I'm doing this until I'm done, till the wheels fall off, and then I'll become a mom or a wife or whatever and just move on to something else. I always see her focused on MMA. I love that about her.
I've never been to that gym before and not seen her there. She is there all the time trying to improve her game, and she has improved her game.
Yep. All right, folks, it's time for our big guest. Eric Nixick is going to join us. So hang in there. He's our co-coach of the year on the MMA Junkie Awards for 2020. And we're going to talk about the way he's starting off the year. He's going to Fight Island. He's got a few of his horses are running. So we'll be right back. Hang in there.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
There he is, the 2020 Co-Coach of the Year for the MMA Junkie Awards, Eric Nixick. What's up, Big E? Congrats on that award.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it, man. It means the world to me.
Nice. And you've racked up a couple now.
Yeah, I got two, actually. So I was blown away by each of them. And this one definitely threw me off guard because, you know, I had a little bit of conversation over the weekend and put in my votes. And, I didn't really think I was in the running, but I was just, giving my thoughts on the year for some guys. And then opened up on Tuesday after practice and saw the news. So I was blown away.
Nice, man. Well, hey, you deserved it. And I think the fun part of it all for us has been watching your progression from just having a guy or two, or, you know, a lady or two, and slowly growing your stable and having more of a prominent, you know, presence, I guess, because a lot of times you would be, you know, holding that spit bucket, you know, you paid your dues along the way, or just maybe holding mitts and maybe not even getting to walk out because you just happened to be in the locker room. You guys are sharing coaches, to now being the head guy, the guy that steps inside, gets your fighters focused, gives the instructions, updates them on the score, rallies them for wins. It's a beautiful thing, man, to see that progression throughout the years.
No, I appreciate you. And you guys are on the ground floor of that, so it definitely means a lot more to me coming from you guys. We've been through a lot together. You guys have been there for a lot of that growth. And, you know, so it means a lot coming from, especially from the MMA junkie community.
Now, I thought LaTorre Gonzalez was going to give you a running, you know, Mike Perry's head coach. I'm just kidding. Congratulations. She just had a baby. Mike Perry, that's his only coach, is his fiance, but they just had a baby and they've had a rough year. So I wanted to congratulate her. But no, seriously, Eric, there's so many great coaches out there, and every weekend, a lot of you guys are just doing great work. But again, I think it's not just the X's and O's. So it's not just fans and media, you know, hearing the advice and going, I like that, or hearing the commentator say it. I think you just created this whole mind frame for the fighter, and you take them through this 8-week journey, you know, their camp, their weight cut, and then fight night is just like the gravy on the mashed potatoes. And most of that, honestly, isn't seen. We only kind of see, unless somebody's lucky enough to walk into the Extreme Couture and catch some of that going, most of us only see those 15 or 25 minutes. But the real grind is behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's part of the beauty of what we do. And I think that's why a lot of us coaches are so close to one another, is because you know, we have to lean on one another a lot of times because people really don't understand a lot of what goes on behind the scenes. So there's a lot of camaraderie that happens amongst us coaches. So, you know, I was blown away at the guys that reached out to me after, because I think it's, you know, winning a coach of the year, no matter who it is, you're happy for that guy. And it's genuine. It's very genuine because, you know, we all have families, we all have kids, we all have time that we sacrifice away from our families that really sometimes doesn't get appreciated the way that it should. So you're the focal point a lot of times on the wins, but a lot of times it's on the losses more over than not. So just any recognition, I think, for our community as coaches and what we put in and the time and effort that we have is just very welcoming. And it's just nice to get recognized, I think, just for my family.
Yeah, that's cool. What was your family's reaction to that?
I've been egging it on at home a little bit, just kind of having fun with them. You know, every time like something comes up, like, hey, we need to do the dishes. I'm like, I'm 2020 coach of the year. They don't do dishes. It's just messing around. But no, they've been blown away. And I had a good talk with my dad. You know, I hadn't really gotten emotional about any of this stuff. And then being able to talk to my dad, and you guys know my relationship with my dad. He was my football coach and a guy that I look up to immensely. So talking to my dad, I got a little emotional just because, you know, it meant a lot to me. And seeing the way he coached and seeing the way my uncles coached, who one of them's passed, and just kind of having that connection, you know, with my dad, who's in the Hall of Fame for Nevada State for football. It just meant a lot, man. Everybody was very happy. I know my dad was super proud. My mom was super proud. But, you know, really for my wife, man, who's kind of the saint in this whole situation, where she allows me to do this and holds down the front at home, but also has a full-time job. So without her, man, none of this stuff would be possible for me.
Does sound like a saint, man, because you got the three kids. And like I say, you keep adding to the stable. I know there's three of them that you're going to be coaching in this run at Fight Island. But I want to circle back to your dad, because you guys have the coaching lineage now that you can share. What did he say to you? You know, does he feel like, hey, son, the job's been done? Or did he kind of give you this outlook like you still got more work to do?
I've always been a little bit of a self-deprecating, where it's like, well, I haven't done this yet, or I haven't done that yet, so I don't know if I deserve something like this. And, you know, I would do that a lot in football. Like, I remember when we beat Long Beach Poly, I had like 7 catches and 2 touchdowns and however many yards or whatever, but I dropped 2 balls. And that's the first thing I look at, like, oh, well, I dropped 2 balls, Dad. I should have da-da-da-da. And my dad's like, yo, man, you just played against a team that's all Division I, number 2 ranked team in the nation, and you did, you know. So that was kind of my mindset right away. And then, you know, talking to my dad about the award, and then, oh, I have to do this. And he's like, hey, man, you've done a great job. And he goes, I'll tell you what, like, you guys are kind of putting your gym and your team on the map. I go, that's a win for everybody. So take a minute and look back at where you've come from. You know, he goes, you're so focused on what's ahead. He goes, take a second. And this is a good time to take a second and look back and see how far you've come. And that kind of calmed me down a little bit. And it made a lot of sense to me. And that's why I love my relationship with my old man. You know, he kind of grounds me and keeps things in perspective for me.
That is pretty cool. But I got a side note. Who was number 2 in high school football that year? I'm just curious.
Well, Long Beach Poly was number 2.
Who was number 1? Sorry.
Oh, you already know, bro. It's probably – well, it wasn't modern day. It was De La Salle, I think, back then. I think it was De La Salle.
Oh, man, throw me the bone.
It was not modern day.
can I ask one more probing question? What was the emotional part for you, I guess? I imagine it has to do with family, or was there something else? Or what did somebody ever tell you you're not going to amount to nothing? Like, I don't know. What's the story behind that?
You know, I don't think it's really one thing you could put your finger on. I think it's kind of all of it combined, George. I think, you know, just the hard work, man. And then you know, you're always going to have that self-doubt creep in your mind, and you don't understand why you're doing things. And, you know, we've done things in our lives where at times you feel like you're making headway, and then something hits you in the face and you just want to turn around and quit. And, you know, I don't want to try to make this like a Tony Robbins speech, but it's just like, man, I just have the mentality of just putting my head down and keep grinding and just always believing that good things are going to happen. And I don't know why, man, I have this undying ability of to find the good out of it, and I know that just to keep working forward. And so to get that award, man, it was definitely emotional, I think, just for everything that's gone on and how hard I've worked to get to this point. Whether, you know, and you kind of want, you know, I didn't want to read any of the comments. I was worried, like, people, oh, this guy didn't deserve that. And I didn't care. I didn't want to read any of that stuff. I just knew that I knew what I've invested in and how hard I've worked. And, you know, I felt that it was important for guys like Dennis Davis and Ray Cepho, you know, and Robert Follis and Randy and the guys that have put so much time into me that I knew this meant a lot to them as well. So I think just the emotional side of just being recognized was overwhelming for me at that moment, especially talking to my dad.
Coach, I want to talk a little bit about the challenges that 2020 brought to you as a coach. We've been in Extreme Couture quite a bit, and we see it's kind of like a family there. But we're in an era where this year, I mean, some fighters were stuck in Vegas. They couldn't leave. Now there's a PI. People do stints out here for months at a time, and they'll come visit your gym. Aljamain Sterling is a guy that I can point out, you know, and they always say one bad apple can spoil a bunch. What's that challenge been like, allowing people to come in and let them mesh with your pros in the pro practice, and trying not to keep it new guys versus old guys, you know, that sort of thing. Can you talk about the challenges that 2020 has brought to you guys there?
Yeah, it's there has been some different egos, I think you can say, that come in and out of the gym. But I think once you start set a standard right from the start, you know, and I always use the example, like if somebody comes to your house and the rule of the house is to take your shoes off before you come in, you know, anytime you just set a standard, you know, like when I go to this person's house, I take my shoes off, or I have to set a standard as a coach and us as coaches right away. So when the new people do come in, they understand, hey, when practice is over and we call time, we jog with our hands up. It's a victory lap. That's the way we train. And, you know, if you don't want to partake, then you don't have to partake. You don't have to come to our practice. So I think once we kind of set that standard and people understand that this is the way we do things, and if you're in, great, we'd love to have you. And if you don't, then no problem either, but here's the door. So we only had to really do that one time this in 2020, and it didn't go over too well for that guy, and he didn't perform very well in his fight. But everybody else has been a great addition to the team, especially Aljamain Sterling. Man, he's been a guy that's been not only has he been helping us, we've been helping him, but I think he only makes us better. Like the guys that he's been going with and challenging, he makes the room so much better. So situations like that and scenarios like that, it just really only helped us.
So if you're the coach of the year, I mean, who's the newcomer of the year at the gym? Who's the MVP? Who are some of these awards if you had to kind of give some out yourself?
As far as somebody that just came in, like or somebody that's like up and coming?
Somebody that came in this year.
Man, I say my guy Roman Daldizi. He's been a great addition to the team. He trains hard. He works hard. He's mean as all can be. And he's a fun guy, and man, the guy goes out and performs. So I would definitely say Roman has been a great addition to the team. Definitely Aljamain, and you know, Aljamain obviously still trains back east, but he has a home here, so he kind of splits camp and time. But you know, when you're in here, you're family, and when you're training with us, you're family. I don't care what coaches you use, but it's all about what you bring to the room. And Aljamain definitely has been one of those guys. So I'd say a toss up between those two, man, that they have been a great addition to the room and helping us and make us coaches look a lot better. That's for sure.
Sound like you're extreme Olive Garden there with that. When you're here, we're family.
yeah, exactly.
Your MVP.
Of the gym.
Yeah,
man. It's for the year. I'd say it's got to go to Dan Ige, you know, just, the year he's had and what he's done and how hard he's worked. You know, I think there's a lot of good things on the rise for Francis. If he's able to fight, if they give him some fights, there's been some guys that are young that have been having a great year. Montel Williams comes to mind. You know, there's guys that just out of the quarantine year, haven't been able to perform yet. But definitely I think Dan Ige in the year he's put together, jumping on the short notice against Edson, you know, the fight he's had against Mirsad Bektik, the main event fight on Fight Island against Calvin Kattar, I thought was a barn burner, you know, and I think he would definitely go get that MVP award.
You brought up Dan Ige, and because of him, you were one of the early coaches to go out to Fight Island and kind of experience what all that is about. Is there any advantages now looking back, going back to Fight Island, doing that first run, going through all the protocols, all that? Are there any advantages you feel that it brings to you coaching wise, being able to show you know, some of your students, some of your athletes going down for a second time?
Yeah, of course. And I think it's just like you would do a walkthrough in football or kind of a mock fight or something like that. But once you go there and you get boots on the ground and kind of understand the layout, and really for me as a coach, I think it's understanding the training environment and understanding how to cut the weight. You know, when you go back to the Middle East, a lot of people don't realize this, but they load their water full of sodium. So if you're water loading and you're water loading full of sodium, you're kind of counteracting the weight cut a little bit there. So, and then understanding the what's available to you to cut the weight, you know. So is there a sauna? Is there a hot bath? Is there a tub? You know, and all those things. So that answers a lot of those questions. And I've been familiar with the area and understanding what we were able to do. So I think that information is viable for the guys who have never been out there.
Will you be the lead corner for just you tell me. So you got Tavares, Puna, and Lungi and Bula?
Yeah.
And then what's your role with each guy? Because I think with Brad, maybe you're a co-coach or
how's yeah. that work? So Ray and I have always been kind of in the corner together for Brad. I think this will be our 11th or 12th fight together with Brad. And then that's Ray's corner, but you know, we feed off each other really well. And you know, I try to run everything through Ray, and then there's times when Ray wants me to get after him in certain areas. So Ray and I corner very well together. With Dalsha, that'll be myself and Dewey Cooper. And then with Puno, it'll be myself and Nate Pettit. So, you know, the roles are really up to the fighter and what they want and what they need. So I'm there to help any way I can. And it's really whatever the fighter feels comfortable with for me.
I think you have great traits as motivating, you know, as a motivator, as an X's and O's guy, you know, whether it's going over the game plans, the calmness that you have in, you know, in between rounds and getting all the info that you need to your fighter, but also just keeping him in the game. Getting that sixth gear out of him, you know, so that you can rally for a win. But man, one thing I just have noticed that's tremendous for you is you put your ego aside, and that's great, you know, because you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when Extreme Couture was just getting going, and you were the young cat around, and your Vitor Belforts and Randy's were walking around the gym, Vanderlei's was stepping in, Jacare, all those guys, you know, you had to earn your stripes. And now look at you, you know, you've won a couple awards, you're making more money, you know, and you're walking down the aisle with these fighters in big, big fights. And yet you're still, the vibe you give me is like, again, there's still work to do and there's still more to learn. And I think that's great. And I hope your fighters can watch interviews like this or just catch those things, you know, when you're coaching and when you're talking to them. Because I think that's what you always want to be with, is someone who never stops learning and someone that doesn't stop taking things for granted and doesn't ever lose their drive to win. You know, I think that's what makes some coaches in the NFL brilliant, is they could be down 14 going into the fourth quarter and they're calm, like that Tomlin guy for Pittsburgh. You know what I mean? It's like, no, we're going to win this still, you know, or guys that are like 6-6, but then they finish 10-6 and they're in a NFC or AFC championship again. You know, it's keeping people in the game, man. That's a strong trait of yours.
I appreciate that, George. I think a lot of that, like you kind of direct to, is people are going to feed off of your energy. You know, so if we're down and we're down, we got a 10-8 first round, you know, if I'm panicked and I'm freaking out in the corner, well, that's the energy that my fighter is going to take on himself. You know, so for me to stay calm and remain calm, I've been in scenarios, you know, being a firefighter, like working through the fire department and being medic, where, you know, people are looking at you when they're hurt and they're in pain and thinking that, you know, God forbid they're going to die. So your immediate reaction and the way you handle yourself and your demeanor, they're going to feed off of that. So I took that experience and kind of brought it over into MMA, where I realized, like, hey, if I can just be calm, speak calmly in a scenario where their stress and their heart rate is going through the roof, well, that's going to project onto them too. Like, hey, everything's going to be all right. Here's how we're going to fix it, right? You know, and I think as far as like the ego stuff, man, I've just always been kind of focused on the future sort of thing. I'm a nerd of the sport. I really like to ask a lot of questions, you know. I kind of took that from Nick Saban. I remember Nick Saban talking about when he got beat by Ohio State, he calls Tom Herman, who was just hired as the head coach for Houston, and had him come in and show him how he beat him. How'd you beat me? What'd you do here? What'd you do there? And here's a guy like Nick Saban, who he's the GOAT, you know, and but he's still trying to learn and he's still trying to evolve. Now, I'm not saying I'm in those shoes, but I took that as an example to where, like, man, I reach out to Henry Hooft weekly, and he's a guy, he's in my mind the GOAT, and he'll talk to me and at length and give me ideas and thoughts and things that just show that, like, at the highest level, he has no investment in me at all, but he cares and he wants to see me help see me grow. So that's kind of the following his lead. That's where I want to be at later on in my career, is where Henry's at in his now, and helping the young guys come up and grow and, you know, pay it forward, because, man, this is a tough industry to be in, not only for coaches, for fighters, for media. We understand, man, we get it. So the all the help we can do, and the more that we can lean on each other, man, it's a community that I think that needs to remain strong.
Again, congratulations on the award. Tremendous year. You've been through a lot. You guys had a shutdown there, you know, and then the way you guys managed the first closure, you know, the one where we were just all closing. I remember you came on and you were really proud of the fact that you kept everybody in the game. That's a perfect example right there. Remember, you guys met payroll for like a month and a half just to put everyone at ease. This is going back to the spring. This was public. So you really did manage a lot. Your three kids and your wife are hopefully proud of you, man, because you did a lot on many fronts that a lot of people don't know. So that coach of the year should almost be like a man of the year, at least here in Vegas. I'm sure there's other people doing great stuff around the world. I can't give you that one yet. But as far as Vegas, you did a lot, man, for a lot of people. So congrats on that. And safe travels to Fight Island, and go out there and get that 3-0.
I appreciate you guys, man. I miss you guys. I miss seeing you guys in the gym as well. So hopefully you guys will be able to come through soon.
We will. And it'll be on a Monday, because that's when Coach Lombardi comes out with the win.
Yes, sir. They love that practice. Trust me.
All right. Take care, Biggie.
All right, guys. Good to see you, man. Thank you, guys.
See you.
All right. Later.
All right. And that is George, for some reason, just completely leaving the interview, which I found hilarious. I think he's used to when we do our normal interviews and when we're done, we leave.
I don't know. I was so excited, like, you know, for him. And to have him on, that, yeah, I think I just clicked the wrong button. I don't know why I did that.
I almost did the same thing when we were getting close to wrapping up, because we do our normal interviews throughout the day when we're not on MMA Junkie Radio. And when the interview's done, we're done. So I had the cursor on end broadcast, and I went, oh, shit, no, we got to keep going.
Yeah. That guy, man, is cool. I think I've said it before, but I'll say it again because it doesn't get old. In MMA, we've met a lot of people, and I would say, if you had to like press me and said, hey, what's the ratio of good people to bad people in MMA? So I'm going to go good first, bad. I'd probably say anywhere between 1090 to 2575. Because if I say 1090, I'm being radio guy. You know, yeah, there's only 10 good people for every 100. The rest are scum. But sometimes I feel that way. But then if you press me, you'll realize that there's really, really, you know, you line up 100 people, there's probably 25 good ones in there. There's a lot of selfishness. There's a lot of ego, you know, and fake, you know, a lot of fake people. But I don't know. I never catch Eric on a bad day, you know, or you don't hear stuff. After 15 years, you start to hear stuff. Boy, that Eric Nixick, something else. Nah, you didn't hear about the time. I haven't heard that yet. You know what I mean? It'd break my heart if I heard it. But he's solid, man. He really is solid. And they had a tough year at Extreme Couture. But he's still in there. And he's one of the cogs over there. Not just the Couture father-son combo, obviously. Now the son, Ryan Couture, is the owner 100%. But Eric has been like their GM for many years, and he has to regulate. And there's a lot of these egos that go in and out, you know. But he's also got a core group that looks after him, like Ray Cepho, like Jay Haran, like Ray Maynard, you know. And they're passing the baton to, you know, Tavares has probably been there a good decade or so. So new guys like that. So I love the vibe in there.
I want to, on that same topic. It's so funny you bring that up, because I had a conversation about this yesterday. I want to give a shout out to Oren Hodek. He kind of had a pretty, a nice little quote where we were just talking about working all these years and all that. And he just said, what was it? The good guys will come out on top eventually in this MMA world. You know, we were talking about how some people can kind of just be scummy and others are just kind of solid people. And Oren's one of the people that we work with. That's just one of those solid guys. It's always a really good guy. And I know he just had a tragedy in his life. And so I was just checking in on him. And that got me thinking a little bit. We haven't maybe shouted out a few people in a while, but if you look at George's background and my background, a lot of our backgrounds are made up of MMA bobbleheads. And we get those from Dave Manley, who is another just genuine, really good guy in our industry. And so I want to shout him out too. And then I got to shout out George because he gave me this for Christmas and I'm wearing it right now. It's a Manchester United training top. And then
we kind of look like a couple of military guys today, right? We're rocking that green olive color.
Yeah. And then if you look over here, Juliet, George's girlfriend, gave me this mug here. It's an MMA Junkie Radio mug. And then I keep forgetting to bring it out. But a listener, Beto, he gave us these cool beer mugs that I wanted to put one up here. So yeah, a lot of the stuff that you see up here are gifts, and George has a couple over there too. So those are all very solid people within our industry. And he's right. Eric Nixick is one of those guys where he just doesn't really do people wrong. He does his thing. And I think there's times where he's probably sacrificed and maybe he could have been not scummy, but maybe more aggressive and maybe made a little bit more money in his life or something. But there's something about just laying your head down under your pillow at the end of the night and just feeling calm, you know, and Eric's one of those guys.
He's taken some L's too, and he's just dismissed them. You know, he hasn't been happy about them and he's learned from them, but along the way, you know, hey, this is what we agreed to. That's not what happened, you know? And I think a lot of us have, you just try and learn from them, not repeat them, but it happens. I wish I could give Paul from Rev Gear a shout out, but Go's rearranged my stuff here. And I noticed our, huh?
What'd I move?
Remember that? Oh, here it is.
Oh, that. Yeah. I brought a glove too.
The factory that he gave us to protect us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another good guy.
Yeah. He's given us, for one, he gave us that at our 2000 show. And we've just kept in touch, not as often as probably I would like, I guess, because he's really a genuine guy, California guy. Probably 2 decades plus in the sport with training gear and apparel. He's sponsored fighters. He's contributed, you know. But when we've gone on our military trips, he's also given us gear to use, whether it was some sort of a seminar demonstration portion of the morale visits that we do, or just giveaways to the troops. And he's always stepped up really, really nicely. So I'll never forget that, man. Yeah, really, really nice guy. Mm-hmm. All right, so Dana White was talking about matchmaking. I clicked the story, but I was like, I don't know. It got me, you know, and I'm not slamming Junkie, obviously. I'm not doing that, but I thought I was going to hear one little bit of info maybe that I didn't know in terms of the science to matchmaking. You know, he said, hey, rankings is a big part of it. When you can get champ versus one or one versus two, you know, in a non-title fight, and he goes, that's golden. He goes, but we look at we keep numbers on them, you know, like how many people watched them on Dana White Contender Series, for example, if it's one of those. Like, so they keep analytics and social media. And I kind of went, yeah, I guess I kind of knew that. But I don't know. I started thinking, well, what if that week you just ran unopposed on a Tuesday and someone just happened to tune in and your ratings were big, but I don't know if that's like really the end all be all. I would imagine I have to be tracking that fighter maybe since then, you know, and seeing if they keep up those numbers. I know he's probably talking to someone like Sean O'Malley, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I remember we used to do great articles, and I don't know if it was Dan Stubb, John Morgan, Matt Erickson. Sounds like a Matt thing. And we discontinued them. But it had to do with the ratings, I believe, on TUF and UFC. But they used to have a good breakdown of why it could have been high or why it could have been low in defense of or critique or just, I don't know, pick. Maybe they took it as critique when all we were doing was divulging the info. But, you know, there's just certain weeks of the year that are important to television. And that's when you get your cliffhangers, you know, like in May or whatever. And then Netflix coming around. I mean, is there some sort of a – do they have some sort of a formula for when they drop their shows? You know, are they playing alongside the major networks? Like, I don't think you want to go on a week when major networks are doing their season premieres of their big shows, you know, or mm-hmm. or how about the fact that Sunday Night Football is like the biggest show all year or, you know, throughout the year in all of television. Did you know that, Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels?
Well, I mean, I heard that, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know if it's just kind of like a constant thing where every year they're that. But that is pretty shocking when you consider all the other things, the other types of programming that go on. It is big. And it's not Sunday Night Football is not always the best matchup. When we were growing up, I always felt like they just did a good job at the beginning of the year of booking Monday Night Football games to always really mean something. And now a lot of the Monday Night Football games you look at, you just go, all right, I'm here because there's nobody else to watch. But Sunday Night Football is not always the best matchup either. So that for that to be the number one show in all of television is pretty amazing.
Yeah. In that article, I guess I was never going to get it, but I wanted some sort of a admission to, hey, look, sometimes the fighter's just pricing them out. Sometimes it just boils down to contract negotiation, which I don't see a problem with that because a lot of times I think he knows that the UFC is always going to be labeled as the bad guy in that situation. And it's not true. I think a lot of times, if you really were to hear both sides, you'd kind of look at the fighter and go, come on, man. You know, like I kind of feel what they're saying. You know what I mean? Pointing to the UFC. But I feel like that really dictates a lot of it. I think a lot of fighters appear to be injured or unavailable, and they're just hanging out for more money. And so maybe that's all part of a bigger conversation of how they need to solve, you know, keeping their fighters around. But fighters sure don't say, you know, I'm 0-2, and I'm glad you gave me that third fight, but I should be getting paid less because when I get paid more, I usually walk into this office and get more money. You know, right. So I think I need to make less. I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. I wanted to peek back at the curtain a little bit on that one, but it's slow. It's slow, so we're not. You know, we're looking to see what's being said out there. So. You know, you just move on to the next article. And there's tons of great stuff on MMA Junkie currently. Did you see Tony Ferguson giving an update on that arm? Remember he got that mm-hmm. arm bar where the elbow bent all the way back. And we thought, okay, you didn't tap, but are you injured? Like, are you going to be out for a while? Because that was brutal. You know, he was saying it was a mindset and he just wasn't going to tap. And you know, some will tell you, hey, when it's over, it's over. But some people are just a little bit more like double jointed. Mm-hmm. But he gives an update, and that guy's like the Wolverine. I've never seen anybody come back from an ACL in 5 months. I think Jerry Rice may have done it. He tore his knee the weekend that Squid had the world's worst parlay, and he tore it on week one versus Tampa Bay, and he came back and played, I believe, in the playoffs, which are like in January. So it was about a 5 month recovery. He didn't play that well, but he came back, lifted the team, you know? Yeah. But Tony's just something else.
I thought it was in preseason. He did it in week one.
No, the first weekend of football, I want to say like 1996. And look, I don't have to tell you, you know, Squid's made a lot of money gambling, so he can laugh at this if he hears it. But this was just his worst parlay ever. He had, the reason I remember it is because we like to bag on each other over the years, but it involved my Niners. I bet the Niners that weekend too. We were at Tampa Bay and we lost 41-3. I know we lost Rice early in the game and Tampa just kicked our butt. Hell, a few years later, Tampa won the Super Bowl. You know, that's when they had Rondé Barber and Hardy Nickerson and Derek Brooks. Remember that linebacker they had? They just had a mean D. John Lynch, Warren Sapp, yeah, Mike Allstott. So they whooped us, but they were young and up and coming. Then the next game was
the Steelers, the Browns.
That was the last game. That was the Sunday night game. The other game was the under in the Cowboys at the Redskins, and that ended like 45-42. So 41-3, we had the team with three. 45-42, that's 87 points. It was probably one of those that was like 47. So we got
squashed. Went into overtime.
And then the last one was, it was the Cleveland Browns' first game back as the Cleveland Browns. And he thought that emotions were going to play and they were going to hang in there. They took the points against the Steelers and they got beat 38-0. The funniest part was he called me like in the third quarter and I was just busy doing something. And he calls me and he goes, "Hey," I go, "What?" He goes, "You watching this bullshit?" And I go, "No." And I was like already going, "Oh man," I was hoping we were at least going to win that game. And I remember he goes, "I'm getting squashed." And I think he, as he progressed, he just put a little bit more. And I think that was just going to be a big weekend where we owed some money. But it was funny. "Hey, you watching this game?" "No." "No, you watching this bullshit?" "No, now what?" He goes, "I'm getting squashed." And that's why it was the world's worst parlay. Mm. The world's worst three-teamer.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, that article's there. Ferguson, you know, he's coming back. John Morgan sat down with Anthony Pettis, and he says, "I didn't want to upset kind of my brother Shine over at Bellator because his brother's one fight away from a title, you know, title shot at bantamweight." And his brother, he felt like, lived under his shadow because Pettis did become a WEC lightweight champ and a UFC lightweight champ. So I got to imagine that's some pressure. And you come up short, you're just, you know, I wouldn't say a failure because he had a good career, you know, in the UFC, but still, you don't have a chance to maybe grow and not always have that label attached to you. So he decided to go to the PFL. He says, "Look, I know my four fights, when they are, they're guaranteed. And there's a big prize at the end." He goes, "I realize I have a big target on my back." But one thing was, is he durable? Because Anthony, maybe not as of late, he may have shed that label, but for a while he was just injury prone. You know what I mean? And these seasons are tough and he's older now. But we'll see. You know, I'm happy that he went to the PFL. PFL's added some really good talent. Verdum, Justin Willis, Rory McDonald, a few others. I think Olivier Aubin Mercier. Yeah. So I'm excited for the season that's coming up for PFL on ESPN.
They're creeping up on Bellator, man. I'm telling you that those are, they picked individuals that you would just tune in to watch. So it's going to be interesting for those guys.
How about that one article that we did? Austin Vanderford explains how a new photo series with wife Paige VanZant came to be. That's an interview that we did a while back. And I think when I did the notes, I may have mentioned that, but I think I just kind of forgot about it. And then it popped up and I was like, oh boy. But it's been getting good traffic.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, just look at the thumbnail, right? But I remember that day because I don't know Austin very good. Yeah, I booked that interview, but I don't really know him that well. And George was the one that asked the question. And when he asked it, I was like, oh no, because I didn't know like how he would react. But he was so cool about it and just so casual. And I think Paige was in the room, right? Because I think he was talking to her. And so, yeah, he just kind of went through the whole thing. And it was just pretty funny. But they did a story on it. And that interview was, I want to say, at least 2 months ago, right?
Yeah. So that should be a good enough reason to download the app or to just go in and check out what's going on. Big shout out to Farah Hanoun, who's been producing a lot of the interviews that we've been doing lately. A catch up there with Puna Soriano. And then I believe Jake Hadley's about to get released or did get released as well.
It did get released.
All right, cool. Kyoji Horiguchi is back in the rankings. That's something that we did. There wasn't much work to do with the rankings this week because it was only the Ryzen card, but he did win and he did avenge his loss from a year ago to Kai Asakura. So, I mean, he's 29-3. Dude, he had a really great UFC flyweight career. It's baffling to me how they let that guy go. But yeah. Then he goes out and he's fought as a bantamweight and done well there. He won the Bellator title, and he had a home and away series with Darian Caldwell. But he gave it up, and now he's just kind of moving around. But, you know, he looked good. But this guy is no joke. That 29-3 is not like, oh, well, he's been beating up tomato cans in Japan. No, hell no. I think he either had an 8-2 run or something like that in the UFC. So it was formidable there. And it was formidable afterwards, including winning that major title, the Bellator bantamweight title. So he's back in the rankings.
What do you think of what Joanna Jędrzejczyk said as far as her motivation for coming back to fighting?
More money and fans in the audience?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think she's playing it smart, and I'll tell you why. Because it's one way to appeal to the fans. I think the fans have gone hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, you know, but mostly hot. I think they only go cold when it's just too much. Like when you're the challenger and you've already lost once, maybe cool it on the whole, you know, like the whole vibe you're given, like, oh, I got this. No, you lost to her once, you know, and you've kind of lost a few others since then. So just take it easy. Win us back slowly. That's something Ronda failed to do as well. Now, it could be that that's their secret to the success, is to always act like you walk on water. I disagree. I think the comeback story is a beautiful thing, because so many people can relate to getting fired and then coming back and getting an even better job, or getting broken up with, coming back and getting a better looking chick or whatever. You know what I mean? And for her, I think a lot of people had written her off. The haters were like, see ya. You know, she had the alien look. She lost the fight. But she fought so well that I think even the haters were like, I gotta tip my hat, you know, and give her that. Can't wait for her to see her come back. So I think her saying that is tremendous. I want to fight with the fans. The fans have been a part of the ride. And here's why it's brilliant, because fans, I wouldn't expect back till International Fight Week. Maybe limited fans, but Dana White says, I don't want limited fans. He'll just do the Apex until he can get that arena full. So if I had to guess, International Fight Week. That seems in line with Washington saying, the state of Nevada saying, the numbers. So I think that's realistic. And what's she going to do? Fight Wei Li? It's worthy of a rematch, except Rose has been pretty impressive herself. So I think it's going to be Rose versus Wei Li. And then could Joanna get the winner? I don't know. That's a tough spot. She's got two losses against Rose, but only one loss against Wei Li in a classic. So she could possibly step in there. However, that's the part where I have a problem, where TJ wanted it. And now Joanna wants it, and they just want to step into the title. And sometimes it happens, like Jose Aldo benefited from it. But I don't know, man. I think she would have to take one fight. I'd like to see one win and then fight for the title.
You know what kind of sucks? I mean, it's brutal, but it's the way things happen. Sometimes you have to look at things from perspective as from a fighter, from a promoter, from fans. She's right. She put on a hell of a fight. And that does deserve getting money for some kind of compensation. But at the same time, I think if you're the promoter, you could probably agree with that. But I think when the door closes and Joanna walks out, they also say, yeah, but she took a lot of damage in that fight. And I don't know that we're getting back the same product now coming around for another run, right? If we sign her for more money or a bigger deal, it's just, you have to look at it as like, in our lifetime, if I get into a really bad car accident, I'm not the same cat when I come back. I'm not going to run sprints as fast. I'm not going to do a lot of things that I used to do. And that was a brutal fight. And before that, she's had some pretty tough fights. So it sucks, because you want to reward somebody like that. But at the same time, I don't know that you're getting back what you got that night. It's so difficult.
But if she can draw, her athletic performance might not be the same, but if she can draw, then I guess she's worth it. And she doesn't look like she skips workouts. She puts in camp. She's really good about social media. Like, hey, look, I'm a girly. You know, I got a new purse or a new bikini. You can follow her there. But then there's just as much stuff saying, hey, look, this is me hitting pads at 2 a.m. or this is me on my third workout on a Saturday or whatever. And she bleeds UFC through and through. And I think a lot of that money, that money that comes at the end is some sort of a reward for what you've done. But the answer is, can you draw? And I think she can. Are there fights that await you? I think there are, because she's willing to play the bad guy. So I think they should pay her. She's right about that. I like that she's hanging back, waiting for fans. I just don't want her to lose two quality years of her life coming off a great fight, because her ego tells you should only be fighting for world titles. You might have to take a fight. You know what I mean? Max Holloway's taking a fight. Robert Whittaker took two fights and won. But you know, it's a risk, but if you're as confident as she is, then you feel like I should beat whoever else is out there, and get this title shot. So showcase me on the same night that Weili Zhang and Rose Namajunas are fighting. I'm insurance for the card if it falls apart, and the strawweights steal the show, steal the shine. There, everybody writes about all the possibilities, kind of like what's happening with Hooker Chandler, Poirier, and McGregor. There's so many things to write about. And then with Khabib in town, that's five lightweights that are going to be talked about in many different narratives.
Yeah, no, she deserves to get, a new contract. I think she still has fight in her. But you know what? I can't help thinking, I mean, I don't think she would get as much money. But man, she would be great in Bellator. I think Bellator does a good job of promoting people like her.
You don't have strawweight, though? So she'd have to move up to flyweight, which she has done. That's what she fought at Valentina, but... Carrie Ann Melendez is really a strawweight, and she's been doing good as a flyweight. So you're right. She probably could do well there. And winning a major belt before you retire and adding to the UFC would be nice. But I don't know. In reading her comments, it sounds like the UFC is just home.
Yeah.
Hell, I even believe that if Bellator offered her more, she'd still would stay with the UFC as long as the UFC bumped the money, but gave her that raise. All right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Big thanks to Eric Nixick for his time and your time as well. You guys have been spending an hour with us on Mondays and Thursdays, and it's a lot of fun. Look out for more stuff that we do on the MMA Junkie website, like the spinning backlick and the rankings report, as well as the interviews that we mentioned. Puna Soriano as of late, Tyson Nam, Jake Hadley, a few others. Folks, enjoy your Thursday. Huh?
We got cool outro music now?
We do, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Enjoy your Thursday, folks. Enjoy the week, the upcoming weekend. And remember, we got a lot of fights coming up here in about a week and a half. So start prepping yourself. Get locked on MMA Junkie. Download our app. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. And don't forget to watch us Mondays and Thursdays here on Sportscaster, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Also, last reminder, the watch-along on January 23rd for UFC 257, McGregor versus Poirier, 10 Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Watch the fights along with us. We got the chat room. It's going to be a blast. We've been having some great, great numbers come and visit with us and hang with us on those watch-alongs. So hopefully you'll join us then. See you, folks. Be a champion.